IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, if you have not agreed to the group's IP policy, we cannot consider substantive contributions. A quick note on queuing in IRC. So we use the IRC channel to queue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. Type Q plus, the letter Q and then plus, to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder message after that. If you're not on the, if you're not on IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue. And please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always type Q plus again. Okay, so 1 second. Oh, wow, we have a scribe volunteer. Thank you. You just saved us a lot of time. Thanks, Mike. Okay, I'm updating the note. Let's see. Okay, I'm going over the agenda next. So first we'll start with introductions and reintroductions, announcements and reminders. Next we'll move to progress on current action items and then status of work items. And then we'll close with the feature DID specification discussion. We have a lot of outstanding issues soon, and Drummond will be on the call today, so he can also help walk us through any major gaps that aren't already tracked in issues. Let's see. Okay, so let's start with introductions and reintroductions. Anyone new here today? I'm sorry, I thought I heard someone.
Yeah, do you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm Snorre, the CTO of Duvala, that we just joined the Identity Foundation a month ago, or a half month ago.
Great. Thanks for joining us. And for reintroduction, and just 1 second. Okay. I think next up for reintroductions, we actually have Drummond Reed. Drummond, do you want to reintroduce yourself?
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Sure. I am at Evernym, my role is called Chief Trust Officer, and that means it's a combination of security, privacy, and identity officer rolled into one, because that's, you know, when you're building self-sovereign identity infrastructure, that's what you're trying to do, is build trust infrastructure, or web of trust infrastructure is a better name for it. And I work on trust frameworks and the underlying standards for self-sovereign identity. I'm co-editors of the DID spec that we'll talk about today. DKMS, Decentralized Key Management System. And very interested in DID auth and verifiable credentials, although I'm not as active on that group. And I'm one of the trustees of the Sovereign Foundation, and I chair the Sovereign Trust Framework Working Group, which is getting close. I think in October, we're definitely going to have a very mature draft of the second generation of the Sovereign Trust Framework by IAW. Unfortunately, I won't be able to come to Rebooting Web of Trust. It's going to be the first one that I'm going to miss since they started. I'm crestfallen about that, but I have to be at the Evernym Fall Summit this coming week. So that's a little background.
Thanks, Drummond. Just 1 second before I move on. Okay, next let's go to announcements and reminders. Okay, and that's our announcements page link that I just included. First of all, something that I did not include in the mail this week because, I just finally realized I need to do it. Christopher, I see you on the queue. I'll get to you right after the scribe training stuff. So this Friday at noon Pacific time, we're going to have another attempt at a scribe training session, and I'm confident it will work out this time. So what we're going to do there is, the first half will be focused on basically what Mike is doing right now, which is how to scribe during meetings. The second half will talk about how to publish minutes. So I had a few people RSVP. Please email me directly if you want to get an invite for that. Otherwise, just join us at that location. So we're going to be using IRC and my Zoom channel so that I can record it and make the video available. Christopher, you're up.
I just wanted to talk about next week rebooting Web of Trust. The link that I put into the chat, it has in the README a list of the advanced readings that have been submitted so far. There are over 20. A lot of different interesting topics ranging from, moving towards a proof of personhood, discussion about things like how do we do resource integrity, how do we do decentralized error reporting, some patterns around using IPLD for DIB documents. A couple of us are using that sort of sub-technique, DTCR and UPort in particular. There's an interesting paper around, how do you negotiate with an issuer in order to get a DID, to get a verifiable claim. So you have a DID, they have a DID, you want a verifiable claim issued, what does that protocol might look like? Lot of other things in that. These will basically be the seeds that we ask everybody to read before the event to help inform the collaborative process that will happen during the event. It's not too late to participate. These topic papers give discounts, substantial discounts, as little as, I think, $247 for those who are independent companies and submit topic paper by Friday. So if you're interested in coming, we'd love to have you in Toronto, and you can see there's a lot of good stuff happening.
Dan Burnett, you're next on the queue.
Yeah, that might have addressed my question. When I looked at, I had not planned on going. It looks like my schedule is freeing up such that it might be possible. On the registration page, it says papers are due no later than September 8th. So I'm assuming by what you said that deadline has been extended to this Friday instead, Christopher.
That was just for the early bird part. Christopher, do you have anything to add?
Joe, I think, has the actual details.
Okay.
So the formal answer is the deadline's passed, but we love you. And if you submit a topic paper and want to come, we would extend the discount for you.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. You're welcome.
One last note on rebooting before we move on to next topic. A few people have rented Airbnbs, so if you don't yet have a place, reach out to, the rebooting leadership email address, and we may be able to find some lodging for you. I say may because the offerings are very few, but go ahead and reach out if you're still looking for lodging. And that's
actually sort of related to that is one of the students, the past student scholarships, they've decided to they received a student scholarship in the past. They have since gotten a job and have decided to offer a scholarship. So if you know of a deserving student, it's been donated for them at Rebooting. So.
Thanks. And actually, Joe and Christopher, if you could double check that email address I put in IRC, I think that's right. And correct me if it's wrong. Next is TPAC, which is October 23rd through 26th in Lyon, France. This is where we're going to be evangelizing the DID specification with the rest of the W3C. The link is right here, if you're able to go. At the same time, which is a very unfortunate coincidence, is IAW, and the link for that is here. That is going to be October 23rd through 25th in Mountain View, California. Christopher, you're on the queue.
Oh.
Christopher?
Sorry.
Christopher, are you muted?
Sorry, is Manu available? I'm trying to get an idea of, the importance of Lyon and how many people need to be there and everything. It's a fairly expensive event to go to. I'd heard that that now there's supposed to be some other IIW identity event that's going to be in the United States, and that's where the actual politicking will happen, and thus, trying to decide priorities.
This is Chris Weber. I don't think Manu's on this call. FYI, Manu and I will both be making it to TPAC, so there will be some representation from this group. I don't know if anybody else is, though.
I'll be there. This is Joe.
I know that.
Yeah, the chair.
This is Dan. I'll be there. Yeah, I'm sure Manu will be there. Yeah.
Okay, Kalia is next up.
I just wanted to say that our ticket sales for IIW are higher than normal. So we have rarely sold out in the past. It's looking like we probably will this time. So if you are coming, please buy your ticket.
Great. Thanks, Kalia. Okay. Was there, let me double check the queue, Drummond?
It was very quick. I was just going to say, what does it mean to sell out IW? We've never done that before. Do we have a hard limit?
Leah? Oh, you're asking me? I mean, the hard limit on the venue, I believe, is 500. But our limit is we're thinking we're going to close registration around 300.
Yeah. I guess that really does make sense. So, wow, that's exciting.
But, yeah, just I'm telling this group because in the past it's totally been fine if you show up the last week and buy a ticket. This time that may not work. So.
Cool.
Okay, next up we'll do progress on current action items. Here's the link to our action items. I called out a few that I was interested in status on. Let's see. Okay, just wanted to do a quick check on Spec Tech training issue number 2. Anyone have any update on that? Andrew, are you here?
Yep, I'm here. So I haven't made any progress on editing out the dead space. But there have been about 15 views of the raw YouTube video. It's Andrew Hughes speaking, AC Hughes.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. Next up is issue number 3, which is, oh, right, okay. This one I think we need Manu on. So this is called Complete Update to RSA Signature Suite Spec. We have a lot of open questions around the signature suites and some of the work ahead there. If someone can speak to that, please add yourself to the queue. Otherwise, we'll move on because I think we need Manu. Okay, I will move on to issue number 4. This might also need Manu, but also just to check on the Verisland DID message spec, if there's any progress to report there.
That's true.
Was that?
I was asking if Christopher Weber knew anything.
Ah, yes.
Sorry, can you repeat it one more time?
Issue number 4 is, let's see, it's called Complete Update to Verisland DID Message Spec.
I'm not participating on the Verisland Method Spec, so I can't give an answer.
Okay. So, and actually the last issue that I had, we already have action on. So I created an issue to do scribe training, and that's going to happen this Friday. Next topic is status of work items. Okay, and before getting to the things that I called out, Joe, you're on the queue.
Yeah, just real quick, I spoke with Lionel Wolberger yesterday, and he is just about ready to publish that minimal disclosure paper. I'm not sure. I guess I want to talk with the chairs on Friday about no, it's one of our work items, so I don't think it's a rebooting paper. And so one of our questions, and we can take it up on Friday, is, well, you know, what do we need to do to formally say yay and publish this as a report? Because I'm not sure what that is. But he asked me to give a last read-through, but he thinks it's pretty mature and ready to go. So hopefully we'll have that within the next week or two as something we can report as done.
Great. Thank you. The next one up, okay, so I noticed something where I and your other chairs have been failing you as a group. So I keep thinking that the document W3C CCG process is done. It's not done, and so I finally reviewed it, sort of where it stands. I'm putting the link in now. We have some open areas which the reason that I think that we need to escalate or bump this up in priority is that the goal was to look through other work items that are still listed as open and figure out what they need to do to close them. And then I realized that section we haven't added yet. So I think the chair should bump that up in priority to close that out, because then we can also close out any other work items that are still showing as open. I think some of them, you know, there's a difference between the work being done and then publishing whatever artifacts that we need to do. So I think that's an issue for us. And one thing related to that is the privacy and security requirements. I think, you know, our guidance around there was that it should be folded into the verifiable credentials group, possibly the DID spec. I think, though, there's probably some additional accounting we have to do there. So if David Chadwick is on the call and has anything to add to that, please add yourself to the queue. Joe, you're up.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one of the things about the process that we need to tease out is we are intentionally very open to anyone in the community who can gather some support and wants to work on something. So that's a very open process. But to publish something like the minimal disclosure paper, we want to make sure that it actually represents the consensus voice of the community group. So we need a little bit more of a filter, a little bit more of a review, and we just haven't teased out, you know, what's the appropriate level of sort of rigor for that process. So I think that's the biggest open item left, and fortunately Lionel's paper will help us through that.
Great, thank you. Okay, anyone else have any status on work items to report? Then we can get to the big item, which is the grid specification discussion. A couple of things I want to add before turning over to Drummond for a higher level context on, you know, what he perceives as the biggest issues. The current draft is here. The current issues in GitHub are here. So if you have anything that you wanted to discuss, sort of concerns or issues that are not tracked in these issues, or if you want to bump the priority and discuss it here, please add yourself to the queue. I think I would like to start with Drummond giving some context on where the spec is at, any sort of high priority issues he'd like to discuss during this call. You know, obviously we want to get to a point over the next few calls very urgently to start just closing out issues. But I think it would be helpful to get a little bit of a refresher on the overall context at this point. Drummond, do you want to take it from here?
Sure. You bet. Thanks, Kim. I don't – first of all, there shouldn't be any alarm bells like, oh, my gosh, the spec is falling apart and everyone's going in different directions. It's nothing like that at all. It continues to be – I just gave a another presentation to a very large corporate that, you know, is really at the table because of the, you know, the industry that is being built on top of DIDs, and you know, it is the foundational element of SSI, self-sovereign identity, and so it's more that the spec is receiving enough attention from enough people that we. What tends to happen is we you know, move it forward to a place where everyone's, you know, happy enough, and then we go off and we implement, we do a bunch of stuff, and then some questions come up, and, you know, the issues sort of pile up, and then we finally go, like, you know, we need to give a little attention to the spec, and we've been through that cycle, I'd say, at least two full times, and I'm feeling like right now that I've had enough. Folks ping me, developers primarily, with specific, you know, fairly narrow questions that I feel like, okay, there are a few issues that we should close. We should put in the effort to just move forward and get closed. And then there's a second step, Kim, that I was telling you about when we got together last week in Seattle, which is there are other folks that are reading the spec, and they're new, they're hearing all about DIDs, and they're coming reading the spec, and there's basically some outdated editorial text in there. And Andrew has made a suggestion about a term, identity owner, that he'd like to see replaced, and I'd love to actually have him speak to that here a little bit. One of the things I'd love for us to have a short discussion about here on the call. And so I think I have told Manny for a while, I don't have the you know, the GitHub ninja skills of some of the other editors that I'm, and he said, well, wait until we've got things fairly stable on the substantive changes, and then we'll do an editorial you know, run through. And I've said, hey, look, I'm primed to do that. I want to just have a chance to go through and update a lot of the original text, which is still a holdover from when we first drafted the spec under a DHS contract, you know, I don't know what, 18 months ago. So it's mostly, Kim, that there's a handful of open issues, and I can list them there. We're still we want to close on what I call service selection and how you can compose
a URL based on the DID that will automatically select the right service endpoint, enable a resolver to select and give you back as developed the service endpoint you're looking for a particular service based on the URL that you compose with the DID. So there's that. Sam Smith, I think, has two small issues that have not been fully addressed, making sure we have the DID query component covered in the ABNF, which was just an oversight. That's what it was when we were first drafting. I think it's one of them, one of making sure that JSON pointers is not something that we prevent the use of, or we interfere with the use of. So, I'll bring up one more thing, Kim, that I thought was fascinating. I was on a Decentralized Identity Foundation, called there's an identifier working group there, and the discussion was all about keys and key descriptions. And they thought that the issue was, oh, we need something in the spec about this. And by the time we finished discussing the issue, it turned out, no, you don't need anything additional in the spec. The editorial guidance is simply about how you use the key description elements to describe your keys. What that group came to the conclusion is, oh, what we need is to get together on a spec about recommended basically recommended key types. It's not a DID spec, but it's a spec, and whether it's at CCG or where that's homed, but there was the conclusion was, oh, wow, there's a critical mass of folks coming to Rebooting Web of Trust next week that could get together and fairly quickly draft that spec. And I pointed them to several other members of this group and folks I'll be at Rebooting, like Sam Smith, who I think would be happy to contribute and take care of a whole set of issues that they thought required changes in the spec, but in fact they don't. All the material they need is there. They just need to now establish essentially best practices for using that in writing up a spec that would cover not one key type, but a bunch of recommended key types. So that's sort of the big picture, Kim. Happy to start talking about specific issues to the extent we have time today. I know we don't have, I think it was mentioned that Manu is not on the call today, but we do have others that have been working some of those issues, like Mike Water. So we could, definitely cover at least a couple of them.
That's great. Thank you. And we already have a queue, but before we start digging into that, first thing, for the, how do you say, recommended keys that you were talking about, so that's interesting. That's different from the registry type thing that we've been doing, which is just sort of an agnostic, here's a list of cryptographic suites or whatever. This is looking at more of a recommendation about which type of keys to use.
Yeah, the discussion, it was about a 45-minute discussion, and where it ended up was the idea, because I know we have that registry, but the concern of the developers that were on that call was, yeah, but if we just end up with a big, long list of different key types, and there isn't any sense of, well, what are people actually using? How do we sort of consciously constrain it to the set of key types that are actually going to be interoperable? Then we're just making the job harder for everyone. So even though I'm not going to be there next week, I said, guys, this is a perfect – I happen to all be guys on that particular call. It's a perfect opportunity with Rebooting coming up next week. Go have a working group session, right? So see if you can form a sub-team there to just get together and say – here is a set of recommended keys. And the big concern they had, Kim, was that in conventional key type descriptions, there are a bunch of variants that people use. And, in different encodings or different tweaks on what's a recognized key type. And they said, oh, it just gets bewildering. And the first thing I explained to them, and I think this is important, I said, folks, you're not understanding that the type property in a key description
is supposed to tell a developer exactly what encoding or encodings, because there may be more than one that are supported for that key type, and therefore how to use them. And I said, there's no reason you have to live with identifiers or key descriptions that are not precise enough. Go ahead and create your own. Even if you have to profile another spec, create the identifier that is the type identifier that is completely unambiguous. It's just right down to the nubbins on the exact variant of a particular key type that is identified by that key identifier. And I further, Kim, made the suggestion, and that's up to the, you know, to this group, that if a group got together and did that and profiled the very most common key types that are needed, and I'm not an expert in that area, but I do know that I keep hearing there are a handful of types that are used, you know, with Bitcoin, with Ethereum, with Sovereign. And if the developers get together and say, okay, these are the keys we're talking about, we all know those, and come up with a set of type identifiers for those and publish them in a single spec, then those identifiers, which can be, you know, can be short, and the suggestion was even come up with a simple convention that's used within those identifiers, then those identifiers could be included in the JSON-LD context, the standard JSON-LD context for DID documents, which would strongly encourage their reuse by other developers. It doesn't mean you can't go in and define your own key types, but it would tend to see those key types reused, which I think, as I understand it from every crypto engineer I've ever talked to, helps reduce complexity, increase interoperability, and, you know, prevent developers from doing the wrong thing. I feel like I'm channeling Sam Smith, who I don't think is on the call here today, but will be at IW next week. But Mike Lauder does a pretty good channel of Sam Smith, too, so he can do that. And so does Christopher Allen.
That's great. I think that's a wonderful idea, and I really want us to follow through on that next week. And now I'll start working through the queue. Kalia, you're up.
Hi. This is building on the discussion about language choice. I've been at meetings at the World Bank, and then also ID 2020, and then in Europe at My Data, and the language of self-sovereign identity is a real barrier for governments even talking to us or this community about these technologies. And so the language that emerged out of the World Bank conversation that I had was sort of self-managed identity. I mean, the conversation was like, you're saying that governments have no role in issuing identity to citizens ever. And I was like, yeah, no, that's not what this is about. And here's how, you know, outline the architectures. And then some stuff sunk in, but they got really hung up on the naming. So I think it's worth seriously considering dropping SSI and moving to terminology that, you know, supports governments engaging in the conversation.
I'm very interested in that topic. And actually, if anyone has something to add to that, add yourself to the queue. I don't know how we should track it, like in terms of should it be a issue against the spec. It's something I've encountered as well. And I know that the term self-sovereign identity is very important for certain forms of branding, but I think it can be ambiguous. It can be confusing to users, and so I think it's worth discussing. So yeah, add yourself to the queue if you have anything to add there. And Joe, you're up.
Yeah. So I'm torn on what you just brought up, Kalia. So I'm going to withhold. But both sides are powerful. But what I did want to talk to you about was what Drummond asked me to talk about, which was this potential shift from identity owner to controller. And that those are – that's did those just – oh, no, they are two separate URLs. So the first one was the issue The second one is a PR I put together. I thought it was going to be a quick fix because I looked for the phrase identity owner, and it was only in there a couple of times. I was like, great, this is going to be easy. And then when I went in to start editing the text, I realized there was a whole section that framed authentication as proving who the owner of a DID was and conflated the notion of owning an identity, the notion of owning a DID, and the notion of owning a key, which emerged in back and forth. Most of the back and forth is in the pull request, number 102. Dave Longley had a lot to say, and Chris, maybe you can, Chris Weber, you might want to speak to, I think Mastodon already deployed the current usage, so it might be an issue to change some of the spec to switch to owner, or to switch the controller from owner. The core issue is that ownership is determined by courts, whereas controller is functional. So I think we can't actually formally know that the owner is what's in the property. And I don't think what we're trying to do is have something like a deed or a title that is the formal representation of who is supposed to own it. I think really what we're talking about is who controls the key that controls the DID, that controls some aspect of this part of some identity that's out there. Owner also gets into this conflation and conversation that confuses governments and other lay people, as Kalia just mentioned, in that, you know, in their mind, they own certain aspects of your identity. And so the whole ownership question is sort of a quagmire, and there have been deep, passionate debates within this community, from people who believe fiercely in self-sovereign identity, where ownership just blew up the conversation, was a rat hole that we didn't get out of. So I'd like to avoid ownership altogether for a whole suite of reasons, and that's what that issue is, and the pull request, and hopefully we can have some conversation, maybe come to consensus about the best way to resolve those issues.
Great, thank you, Jim.
This is Christopher Allen. So specific to that item, you know, I too have run into this. I've been consulting with a variety of legal and legislative organizations around these technologies, most notably Wyoming, which has a meeting on Monday for their second series of blockchain and cryptography related enabling legislation. And this concept of ownership has come up repeatedly. It is something that's always been kind of problematic, so I'm really hoping that we can switch to something that is more functional rather than property-based for this. You know, possession can be the law, but I don't think it is the law. So this is sort of a, you know, controlling a key is, you know, much more, I think, indicative of the technology and addresses a variety of problems. I wanted to speak secondly to self-sovereign identity. I occasionally get the feedback. It was very interesting being in Taiwan. Taiwan seems to love self-sovereign identity. Taiwan's in a very difficult position where the Chinese government is basically saying, you know, you're not a country and we're forcing other countries economically to not recognize, your embassies, your political activities, et cetera. And they are now down to 17 countries in the world that recognize them as a country due to that. Most notably, El Salvador was given, you know, millions of dollars of economic aid from China in order to not recognize Taiwan anymore. So they look at the story and everything and are seeing it as a, no matter what, our citizens, no matter where they are in the world, our citizens have identity and they have protection and all of that. I've had some similar things in Wyoming, which is a very libertarian state. So this feels to me, every time I hear the self-management, the biggest proponents that I've been having for self-management are across the straits from Taiwan in Hong Kong, where, you know, they have a little bit of independence from China, but they have to give lip service to the, you know, social credit system and Chinese control, and, you know, they want to do sort of self-administered, I think, was the language that they were using. So, I don't know, the part of the reason why self-sovereign was struck as a good idea was that it does cause this tension of, you know, you are a person under the UN Charter of Human Rights and have rights no matter what country you are involved in, and countries keep on trying to push back on that. As we start working with more countries, this will be interesting. I do note that the report that was published last week from Holland strongly pushed self-sovereign identity as what they wanted to do, and the 10 principles of self-sovereign identity were in their document. I haven't actually met with their legislators or any of that type of stuff yet. I hope to see some of them next week at rebooting. But this is an evolving area. That's it.
Thank you. And I want to get to Mike next, but actually first a quick note. I realize if we debate self-sovereign identity on this call, we might spend the whole time doing that and not really making a lot of progress on the DID issues. So maybe if for follow-up conversation, can we move to the mailing list or a GitHub issue? And I'm going to call on Mike next, who's been waiting patiently.
Okay, I'd like to talk back on the issue of keys and what are the most kind of well-used or best practices. I'm currently working on a library that is meant to be open and allow this kind of interoperability that Drummond was talking about. I can post the link in here. And so far, there's been a fair amount of interest on it. It currently supports two of the most popular key types, but I would like to collaborate with others that would like to see others. And it would be great if we could probably establish this to help with DIDs. So anyway, rebooting the Web of Trust, I will be going, and I wouldn't mind spearheading this part of the discussion to come up with the best practices for DIDs in key management.
Thanks, Mike. And when you get a chance, can you send that that link that you mentioned either in the IRC minutes or to the email alias? Very interested to see that. Thank you. Let's see. I think we saw one more person. Ryan, you're next.
Thanks. My soapbox speech can wait.
Well, you can give us a snippet of it. I don't mean to totally shut down conversation, but I notice we only have 15 minutes left.
I think self-sovereign identity is an important concept. It's what we know we have a right to, and we should keep working for it.
Okay, thank you. And Christopher, you're up next.
Yeah, so I wanted to respond to this list. So, you know, I've been talking with various people. You know, we seem to have three different keys that are being used by various members of the community, and then we have multiple formats by which those keys are used. The three keys are 25519, the SECP 256K curve under ECDH,
RSA.
Yeah, there's one RSA that seem to be kind of the three underlying approaches. Those are for two signed verifiable claims. There isn't really use per se of signing DID objects. Many of the DID objects, in fact, are not signable. Or not signable in a conventional sense. They're signable as a construction based off of the blockchain they come from. On the other hand, then we have keys for a wide variety of other purposes that are outside of verifiable claims. I put in my verifiable claim, my PGP keys, and say that, you know, these are alternate keys for me. You know, I put a variety of other proofs, you know, and not precisely keys, but, you know, various other kind of proof materials in my prototype DID document. So could be that what we need to do is maybe just be explicit that we're focusing on those things that are going to be used by verifiable claims and the keys that are going to be used by verifiable claims. This does raise sort of the next part of the challenge, which is so far there are three, maybe even four approaches to how something is signed separate from a key, because we basically have the JSON-LV 1.1, which is kind of in a indeterminate state because 1.1 is being finalized. We have the JWT from the ITF world, which is what Uport is using and I think Civic is using. We have sort of CBOR style IPLD styles, et cetera, that, you know, all use the same keys but use very different canonicalization techniques. So we have to be careful because it's still not clear to me, despite this group kind of being founded around doing JSON-LD, that JSON-LD is where the momentum is going to be. So when we're talking about these, we need to separate them from the canonicalization.
Mike, you're up.
Yeah, so the point of this also was to support interoperability. We've got to have that if DIDs are going to take off, for to be able to talk from a sovereign DID to the BTCR DID to Verus One DIDs. And that's part of the point of the library is currently right now it supports high security mode as well as a portable mode. So portable meaning there's no guarantees about whether the libraries have been vetted or not, but they should work anywhere. And if you want higher security, fine, that's the default and you can use it. And so the goal is to make it is so you have this interoperability going on between the Verus DID offerings. And you're right in that, yeah, so far there's keys used for verifiable claims, there's keys used for indicating am I authorized to make changes to the DID doc itself. So those should all be accounted for, but we can't forget about the interoperability being a core component of DIDs.
Thanks, Mike. Let me see. I think we have a clear. Oh, wait. Mike, did you have another topic or did I just get confused in my accounting?
Can I respond real quick on just to clarify? I think it'd be great to identify what all of these things are, including the canonicalization. So far, Verus One is the only one that looks like it's using JSON-LDs. And that looks like that's going to be a problem area. So without more libraries that support JSON-LD, you know, this is going to, you know, it's going to, that's causing a problem less than the cryptographic curves themselves. So it's becoming a critical problem, and we need to talk about that specifically at rebooting and at W3C after.
Okay, thank you. And I think we have a clear queue at the moment. So actually, we don't have much time left, but I wanted to turn over to Drummond to follow up on some of the issues that he mentioned. Drummond, was there anything that you wanted to discuss on the service selection part of it, or are there any other issues that we can take a look at now and discuss?
So, I'm sorry, Kim. I got my wife literally just opened the door and asked me something as you were asking that last question. Say that again.
So, I was taking notes when you were talking earlier, and so we talked about the keys and key descriptions part a lot. One of the
yes.
other areas that you mentioned was service selection, and you mentioned
yes.
composing the URL based on a DID. I was wondering if there's any details you wanted to add there.
Well, Mike Water has submitted that PR request. It's not terribly complex, but it is something we need we need agreement on from the contributors to this spec. So we just need to close on that issue. It's fairly straightforward how service selection works, but I can't emphasize how important it will become. It addresses a number of use cases that make DIDs very practical to use in existing web infrastructure. Again, I think it's fairly well described in that particular issue, and Mike is happy to provide more details. The other two issues I mentioned that Sam Smith had raised are more, one of them is just remembering to add the did query component to the ABNF, and that was again just an oversight. The whole idea is that we want to make sure that DID is a fully conformant uniform resource identifier with RFC 3986, and so that it is compatible with the rest of web infrastructure, can be used the way URLs are used, and that we make it very clear when you need to go from a DID. What we call a DID URL, a DID that has a path, a query, or fragment component, that it's very clear what the rules are for how that's resolved. So there's not a lot of work left there. And then Sam Smith's other point about Jason Pointer is actually basically just an editorial thing. So I think those are the main things on the list. I don't know. Oh, I know. Daniel Hardman has been pressing for clarification on ID values within the DID documents to make sure that there's very clear whether or not they're absolute or relative, or if there's any difference. But I think that issue is also close to getting closed. So I am happy, Kim, you and I talked about it. Sometimes it just takes some dedicated calls. I don't know whether we have enough time on these calls. We do. We can, but what we need to do is we need to get the set of, sort of active editors and contributors together on one or more calls. I suspect it might take two of them. We've done this before a couple times, just had a couple dedicated calls, and I suspect we might need to do that again, but I'll leave that up to you and the other chairs to decide if that's a good mechanism.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. We just need that dedicated time. So we'll follow up on that. And let's see. So we only have a few minutes left. I don't see anyone on the queue. Some possibilities I considered. So we have some of the DID spec issues that are unassigned. Can we find owners here? I also noticed that almost everything that is assigned to Manu, and I'm worried that we're making him a bottleneck, and he already has very limited time. So I guess if anyone has anything to add about potential owners for unassigned or whether we can help load balance Manu, Please add yourself to the queue. Yeah, I think we probably do just need these dedicated calls to work through some of these things and cloning. So, yeah, I think with that, we can close a couple minutes early. And so, yeah, essentially stay tuned for, announcements on the DID focus sessions that will be done separately from these ongoing calls, just so we can deep dive focus on that. But we follow the usual CCG rules. We take notes and everything and ensure everyone who wants to attend can. Thanks, everyone, and thanks, Drummond, for getting us up to speed on the DID spec status. And
what do we want to do about next week's meeting, given some of us will be flying to reboot it to Toronto?
I was just going to say that. I think we'll need to cancel it.
I'll be at an airport.
I'm going to be tied up next week, too, for the same reason I can't be rebooting. So, yeah, I would vote that way, too.
Okay, so we're going to cancel next week, but the week after we'll resume. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks again. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Kim.
Thanks for the call.